went straight to a place called Kaesong. And the very next day we went into action in a range of hills. This time I was with the Northumberland Fusiliers. I went out to Korea with the Northumberland Fusiliers to join the Glossers on arrival about a month later. I was a driver operator, machine gun operator, with a section of guns. I was what you call support company in HQ. All my army service, I was a member of HQ. We used to fire all night. The Chinese were in the war this time. And they would attack at night, and come dawn they would disappear, and there was no trace of them. Our guns used to freeze up, it was so cold. We used to have charcoal fires on the machine guns to try and keep them going. We'd fire the machine guns at the Vickers machine guns, which are cooled with glycerine. But they still froze up, and they would fire single shots as though we had them on single shot firing, and then they would slowly quicken up and fire faster and faster and faster. Brain guns were frozen, stain guns were frozen, rifles were frozen, they were useless. When I got the brain gun firing, my job was to fire the brain gun, all the mortar, 2-inch mortar, use the range finder, and use the radio, and I was in the commander's post, and I was second in command. Commander was a sergeant. Well, towards dawn, after the firing going on all night, we're supposed to cease fire then, of course. But I saw one of the enemy running along a bank, along a paddy field. I'm afraid I let things run away with me. I had my blood boiling. And I was firing a brain gun. I must have fired about 6 magazines away in those hills until the commanding officer rang up and said, "Who is that bloody fool firing up there? Tell him to stop." Then I came to my senses and stopped firing. When it became real light, the village down below the hills would bring out their dead. Because during the course of the night, when you're firing mortar shells into the valleys, they just go anywhere, drop anywhere, of course. And what we didn't kill in the village, the enemy did. And all the peasants would go to work in the fields as though nothing had happened. They'd bury their dead first. But those same peasants were the enemy at night. Whenever it got dusk, dark, they would bring out their guns and grenades, mortar bombs. And the next day they were peasants again, burying their dead, digging in the field. What could he do with that? Nothing. One section got overrun. And they used to fire the same machine guns as we did. The brain gun is a pretty widely used gun throughout all armies of the world. One chap was taken prisoner and he went wild. He just grabbed a gun, brain gun off of a Chinese, and mowed quite a few of them down. I forget his name now. He'll be found in records. He was a madman, stupid but mad, and a good soldier, of course. First, my ad, they stripped him naked before he took his gun, and he'd run about in a nude. This is a thing the Chinese done quite frequent. They would take you, strip you off, and turn you out in the ice and snow to find your own way back or die. We had several men come back like this, naked and frozen. A terrible thing. One peculiar thing, which I never see anywhere else in the world, in Korea, they didn't sell eggs by the dozen. They sold them by the yard. And they sold apples by the yard. They put them in a little straw sheaf. And if there were small apples, you've got more. If there were big ones, you've got less. Or eggs, the same. When we arrived in Korea, we weren't allowed to use the water because of liver flukes. You couldn't even boil it and use it. So you can imagine, we got pretty dirty quick and couldn't wash. Of course, by the time we finished in Korea, we not only washed in the water, we drunk it. I remember having a bath in it one day. And in the same little pool I was bathing in was a big snake. And they had some big snakes there. He just wriggled out the water and away he went. We used to go down to the rivers, strip off, and give our clothes to the Korean women to wash while we had a bath. Then they lay them out to dry in the sun. Of course, it's the summer now I'm talking about. And out there, there's two extreme weathers. Arctic winter and tropical summer. As I say, lay them out to dry, and we put them back in, give them some food or some whatever they wanted, clothes, and on our way. Later on, we had the mobile units, bath units, and it's quite a treat to go and have a bath. I'll never forget my first bath when I went to Seoul for a bath after about 6 weeks. We went into this washroom and sat on little stools with a little bowl of water and soap and just lathered ourselves all over. And then we got in a communal bath, big stone bath, with all the Korean men and boys. And this bath was a big one. All about probably 20, 30, 40 of us. And the women were one side and the men the other. I'll never forget this. It's a big joke. But it's a good bar. I went up and down those roads from Kaesong to Pyongyang. To Busan, hundreds of times. Because when we weren't in action, or in action, my job, as I said before, was wireless operator on the DR. I'd done a lot, really. I always had an old Jeep. When I say old Jeep, it was old Jeep. It was more like pushing it than driving it. I suppose I had an escort, because it's guerrilla country, but you could never get no one to come with you. I used to drive up and down those roads, never know when to get back. The old Jeep used to break down regularly. I remember once when it was frozen, I went down a road. No roads, we built our roads as we went. The engineers built the road before we go forward. And they're only mud. When it rained, the monsoons, you're up to your knees in mud. And when it dried out, you're up to your knees in dust. Anyway, there was always a a drop, a bank, either side of the road to keep it clear of the water, paddy fields. And I was taking a chap to the dentist, a chap called Smith, a corporal. And I got into a skid on this ice. I spun around and went over the side. And knocked his tooth out. Didn't need to take him to the dentist. And we were miles from anywhere. So I thought, that's us. We'll never get out of this. But within seconds, a big army crane come around the corner, saw our predicament, hooked onto us, and picked us straight out before the eye could get up the sump, and towed us back about 12 miles to our local workshops. That was the worst tow I ever had in my life, because the back wheels were buckled, and they lifted the back end of the car, Jeep, and towed me back, and didn't tie the steering, and I had to steer backwards with the two back wheels in the air all the way back for 12 miles. It was like 12,000 miles. Later, Corporal Smith was killed. He was a reservist too. He was killed in Death Valley. Death Valley was the first time that we got on the run again. Dunkirk reminded me of. We were Christmas Eve, I think it was. They had some Christmas food, some turkeys, and they were going to have a feed in this valley. But we were attacked and overrun, masses and masses of Chinese volunteer forces. I'll never forget, because during the last war, Second World War, on that march, as I've talked about before, my legs used to give out, my knees and my groins through marching. Well, funny enough, I never had a jeep at this time, and I was walking, and it happened again. So I thought, this is it, I'm going to be left behind. But I was fortunate in the end to get a lift on a jeep with one of my friends. But before this, coming down the valley was all the wounded. It was dark at night, and when the brain gun carriage would stop, or trucks would stop, and we would peer in and inquire who's wounded, who's wounded, it would be always the same: Harry, John, Dick, Tom, all your friends. They were really massacred in Death Valley. Within a couple of days from what I'm talking about now, we pulled back anyway. And my transfer came through back to my old regiment, the Gloucesters. Later, Glorious Gloucesters. We advanced back up through Seoul at one time up as far as Pyongyang. But we were on the retreat again, right down through Seoul, down to Daegu. Then a month later we'd advance again, take Seoul over the 38th parallel. up into the north. Then in April 1951 was when the Chinese attacked on the MGM River. They used to go over the river on patrol, our troops, and spearhead 20 miles, 15 miles, see nothing. But one night, 24th of April, they went over 17 miles, came back, and the Chinese came in behind them, followed them back. The old front was attacked. That's when the Gloucesters held out 4 days on those hills, cut off completely. Just a few hundred men, with thousands and thousands of Chinese. I was there with them. Colonel Khan, VC, one of the best colonels I've ever known, said to me, "You go out with your jeep, take this message, get all the spare spring guns, all the spare ammunition and magazines you can get, and try and get them back in again." Well, I went out under fire all the way down the valley, and they were killing all the ambulance men in the ambulance trucks. They had no respect for nothing. They would be sat down, the Korean guerrillas, with their, I don't know what you call it, but they used to wear smock trousers and coats, and they were baggy on them, full of, like eiderdowns they were, but inside there were guns and grenades. As soon as you passed by, they would just jump up, out they came, and that was it. You never knew when it was happening. Well, when I got out, the reason I went out, because they had nothing left, no ammunition, no nothing. Radio battery almost flat, almost gone. And then when I reached Brigade HQ and explained the predicament, they couldn't get, no one could get back. The only way was to get any reconnaissance planes. That time we didn't have many helicopters. Reconnaissance planes, and we put all the brain gun magazines and guns and ammunition in sandbags stuffed with straw, took them over and dropped them from the reconnaissance planes onto the Gloucester positions on the hills. But as you would understand, most of it just rolled down the hills to the Chinese. But the Gloucesters really held out this time. They've always been known to fight back to back and all the fought. They get all the stuff like that. 13 men came out of that battalion from that position, and I was one at the early stages. When we mustered our men, the second in command got out. Digby Griss was his name. We had 17 men, and he rallied us together with brain gun magazines and brain gun carriers and took us in again. This was just a bit of bravo, because It was hopeless. Anyway, he got an order to withdraw, and he went back, passed through Seoul again. I think we went Daegu or down that way somewhere, and we stopped there for quite a while until we advanced again about 4 weeks later and took up the exact same positions as we had before when the Chinese overrun us, the same hills where the Gloucesters held out, the same trenches. I was even in my own trench. We even dug up some of our dead around about the trenches, and also some of the Chinese pack mules. They buried them around the trenches, and they stunk even worse than the human beings. After we consolidated in our positions, the front was quiet at this time, and I was due for a leave in Japan. So I went to Japan for 5 days and had a bit of rest. When we came back, I was back at F Echelon for quite a while. The front was quiet, and I was due for home soon. But I started feeling ill. I went to the field ambulance hospital, tents, of course, several times. And I got discharged. I went back again. I wasn't well. Got discharged. I went back again, just for a few days. And the doctor said, "It's just in my chest." And that was the first time I ever had doubts about my chest. He thought I was bad. And then he thought it over and sent me back again to the unit. I was never well after that. And when I arrived home, I had malaria. And I think it must have been something to do with it then. Funny enough, I took my tablets, my malaria tablets, all the time I was in Korea. About 6 weeks after I arrived home, it attacked me and I was seriously ill. They say that when you stop taking the tablets, after about 6 weeks, if you've got malaria, it comes out, which it did with me. But also to take patrols forward, drop them near the front, let them go through the enemy lines, and return. I would return. But one night, a patrol went off, what they call a forward patrol. My jeep was called forward patrol, written on it. They went off at night, and early hours of the morning before it was light, I had to go forward to a given position and locate them. Well, I went through, and for some reason the patrol had stopped in a village overnight. Orders came through. But I passed this position and went forward to the one where I had to rendezvous with them. I went forward and forward and forward. And in Korea, we used our headlights it was safer to use your headlights and get shot than go up the side of the road in the ditches. And I picked up a Chinese guard, as I thought. I went past it. They were stationed there with their rifles. I went past this guard for about half a mile, turned around quickly, and drove back. I'd gone forward into a Chinese bunker position, turned around and come out again, and I wasn't even stopped or shot. Well, on the way back, I met this patrol. They decided, for some reason, to stay in the village overnight and advance in the morning. Now, I didn't leave till the morning, but I'd gone past them, and on the way back, I picked them up. The officer wasn't a very nice chap. He said, "Where have you been?" I said, "I've been forward to the position where I had to pick you up." He said, "Well, we're not there. We're coming up now, aren't we?" I said, "Yes, but you should have been there last night." Then he told me about stopping in the village, and I was mad, and I drove away. Because there was no signs. You see, we always left a sign, and I would follow these signs to pick them up. He called me a dog. When I drove away, he said, "Come here, you hound." I said, "Don't you talk to me like that." And I went before the old man to ask him to apologize, which he did do in the end. Another time I went forward patrol, and the Chinese had pulled out of a village, and I went in. I was always up the front on my own, away with a jeep driving along, and I came across three or four Chinese girls, and they were the Chinese comfort girls. They're prostitutes that they carry with them. But they pulled out and left them there. And this was a period when it was cold again. And I picked two up. Two were dead, I think. I'm sure they were. I picked the other two up and took them back with me to HQ. And left them with the hospital. I don't know what happened to them after that. But they were pretty near frozen to death then. You took up and down those roads and see the dead lying on the side of the road. They'd be there for weeks and weeks and no one would move them, especially the Koreans. I don't even recognize him. Old, same old man still there, kind of thing. Sometimes someone just set a light to them and burn them up. Other times you go through villages and look in the houses, which was our job to do, of course, and there'd be the old people left behind when they evacuated, all these civilians, left behind to die. I remember an old chap, you couldn't touch them because of disease, lying on the floor in one house, holding his hand out to me, too weak to eat, biscuits and bully. But that's all I had, so I opened a tin of corned beef and pushed it in the door to him with a piece of wood and the biscuits. And the next day I went back to see how he was, and he was dead, and the bully and biscuits were still there. Very often you go into those houses and there they were, stretched out dead, lying on the floor. I've seen hundreds of people burnt to death with napalm bombs. The village was only made of thin wood and straw and mud. mud. And when those napalm bombs came down, they just burnt the village down in seconds. And then you see all the corpses lying there, shriveled up. One time, it was my job, with my Jeep, of course, or another truck, bigger one if I had more men, to take out any new recruits we had joined us, take them out up on the hills, and show them all the dead Chinese lying there. This was propaganda, of course. This was to get them to warfare. Actually take them sightseeing on the hills, where we killed all the Chinese in their holes and burnt them, foxholes, left them there, especially to take new recruits, reinforcements, up the hills to see them. I never used to go up the hill. I'd take them as far as the bottom of the hill, and then the NCO would take them up, because I didn't want to see it.